Welcome to Watch Mojo, and this is Pop Culture Now. Me, I'm your host with the most mojo. It's Mr. Hollywood himself, Matt Demers, welcoming you to an amazing show. Listen, I'll be speaking with Anthony Hamilton Jr., who appears in the new remake of White Men Can't Jump. Don't want to miss it. Plus, I got the hilarious Stephen He. He talks all about his comedy, plus his new show, Ginormo. Don't want to miss any of it. But first, it's time to jump into it. Here's your news and views. All right, everyone, we begin with some movie review roundups, starting with Disney's latest live-action remake, The Little Mermaid.
You went to the above world.
A man was drowning. I had to save him.
This obsession with humans has to stop.
Critic reviews for Disney's latest retelling have been surprisingly really good, with the consensus being that this is the rare occasion where the remake actually recaptures the magic of the original.
Are you listening to me?
Yes.
You won't tell him. I won't tell him, and I will stay in one piece. You got it?
Got it. Sorry, what'd you say again?
Meanwhile, Harrison Ford's Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny received a warm, if not tepid, reception at this year's Cannes Film Festival. While many critics said it was sweet on nostalgia, others noted that it was a complete waste of time. Ouch.
You've taken your chances, made your mistakes, and now a final triumph.
Indiana Jones.
All right, so the positively reviewed The Little Mermaid is in theaters right now. Meanwhile, the very mixed Indiana Jones and The Dial of Destiny will hit cinemas on June 30th. But joining me right now to give me her hot takes, why it's Watch Mojo's very own Phoebe DeJeux. Phoebe, starting with these two movies, which one would you rather, and what do you make of these reviews?
So anyone who knows me knows that I'm like sick and tired of a reboot. Like, I want some original content. But if I had to choose between the two, it would be Little Mermaid. Just because I've heard that like Halle Bailey is like a vision in this movie. And I saw her perform Part of Your World live on American Idol. And so I really want to see it. As for Indiana Jones, I think I'm going to skip it because I heard that people were like talking in the theater when it premiered at Cannes. And I'm like, that's not a good sign.
I've been tortured with voodoo. Been shot 9 times, including once by your father.
All right, well, moving on to other movie news, Phoebe, as Quentin Tarantino has announced that Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Rick Dalton, has died.
Last night, we watched a Rick Dalton double feature.
All the shooting.
I love that stuff, you know, the killing.
A lot of killing.
Yes, Tarantino says that Rick Dalton, the 60s actor portrayed by Leonardo DiCaprio, has indeed passed away. The news was announced by the Video Archives podcast, in which Tarantino co-hosts. They also plan on doing a special all about Rick's fictional career.
Rick is a good-looking guy, came out to Hollywood, wanted to do Westerns because he knows he looks good in a cowboy outfit, and now it's 1969 and the culture has changed.
But not to worry. Apparently, Rick passed away peacefully at his home in Hawaii. He is also survived by his wife, Francesca.
It's official, old buddy. Well, has been.
Phoebe, R.I.P. Rick Dalton. What do you make of this? Is this silly, or is this, should we do more of this, or is Tarantino, what is going on here?
I think it's hilarious. I think it's such an interesting kind of like promo for the movie after the fact. It just keeps people talking about the movie, brings attention back to it. I think it's hilarious. I think it's so suitable for a movie like this, which was so deeply comedic. I think it's so good and so funny.
Hey, you're Rick f***ing Dalton. Don't you forget it.
All right, switching now to the small screen, Phoebe, as school is back in session for the adult animated series Clone High.
How did the clones who have been frozen for 20 years take it when you told them?
For anyone who thinks it's 2003, you're wrong.
Oh, they have pens on strings now.
What a world.
Yep, the original series, which debuted in 2002 on MTV, has returned to the Warner streaming service Max. The show, of course, takes us through the halls of a high school filled with clones of historical figures.
It's 2003. Guys shouldn't be afraid to talk about feelings.
Oh, Abe, I always want to be your friend.
Do you think we could ever maybe be more than friends?
Hey, JFK!
And while it only had a short run, the OG Clone High was highly praised for its unique premise, clever writing, and overall humor.
There's so much wood.
Wood.
I'm gonna nail ya with my nail gun. That's in my pants.
No, oh, don't put it in your pants.
Phoebe, they are back. Clone High was very popular. It became a cult classic. It was only on for one season. But listen, it was such a fun concept. Did you ever tune into the original, and will you be tuning in now?
I've never seen an episode of this show, but I've heard a lot about it through my work at WatchMojo because I know our fans really like that show. It's a shame that it was so beloved and it only went on for one season. So I'm excited to see what the reboot will bring. And I'm excited to see like what characters there will be, because the original was like all about historical figures, right? So are there going to be new ones? Is it going to be like the same cast of characters? I'm really curious to know.
You don't have control over anything. Guys, don't worry. We'll get through this. Nothing can tear us apart.
Finally, something to live for, a family.
All right, well, lastly for us, Phoebe, is a look at what's on the horizon for actor Nicolas Cage.
But I'm going to get this next role. And when I do, all of that changes. Then I'm back.
Not that you went anywhere.
Well, Cage has signed on to an upcoming movie where he will play a man who returns to his hometown in Australia to take on an evil gang of surfers. No, for real.
What a hunk. Oh, yeah. Check out those pecs.
Oh, I'd go for that in a minute, for sure.
He's hot.
Oh, yeah, he's my kind of guy.
The announcement came at this year's Cannes Film Festival. The psychological thriller will naturally be called The Surfer. No, for real.
I'm Nick Frigger!
Phoebe, Nicolas Cage is hitting the beach to fight a gang of surfers in a movie called The Surfer. Are you going to be watching this? Because I sure am.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I feel like Nick Cage is having like a resurgence right now in popularity. I just saw Renfield and it was so funny. Yeah. It was such a perfect role for him. So I'm really excited to see this one, if not just for his hilarious antics.
Some call me the Dark One. Others, the Lord of Death. To most, I am Dracula.
Okay, obviously we're dealing with a little bit more than just narcissism here.
Hey Phoebe, thank you so much for helping me break all that down today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, don't go anywhere. You know the drill. The drill is you got to stick around during my Mojo Chats of the Week. When we come back, though, we're going on the trip. The trip is...
Beyond the list.
You assumed I couldn't hoop because I'm white, which is incredibly outdated.
No, I assumed you couldn't hoop because you were dressed like a white girl at Whole Foods.
What a love.
There's a new movie out. It's called White Man Can't Jump. If it sounds familiar, that's because it's a remake, a reboot of the original. And I've got one of the stars here to join me to talk about it and so much more. Hey, Anthony, how are you?
What's going on? How you doing?
You know, I'm fantastic. I'm excited to talk to you because I'm going to age myself. I do remember that original film,
right?
Classic Wesley Snipes. Woody Harrelson. Before we get into, you know, kind of this new one and your particular role, tell me, what was your relationship with that original? Had you seen it prior to this?
Of course. Yeah. I felt like even if I didn't see it when I got casted, that is a must if you're going to be a part of a classic, if people were hyping it up to be the thing that it was. Right. So I'm in a family that's heavily invested with basketball. So all the classics, Above the Rims, the White Man Can't Jumps, the Space Jams, all these movies, like we grew up on it because that's all I knew was basketball. But my involvement, my career on social media started at Venice Beach. And I feel like I was at Venice Beach playing 2-on-2 with people, playing 1-on-1, hustling, trying to, you know, just make ends meet and trying to grow my platform. And then actually the owner of Venice Basketball, him and I are known to be like the modern day you know, White Man Can't Jump on the beach, you know what I'm saying, doing our thing. And we're at the end of the ESPN 30 for 30 episode. Like, they show in the credits, it's me on Venice Beach, like, dunking with him and doing all these things. So that was really dope. And that was like a coincidence that they casted me for the movie right after that.
That is really cool. That is really cool. Right. And I love going to Venice Beach and seeing you guys. It's always fun.
It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Okay. Let's talk about the new movie. Yes. Who we got in there? Who's our two leads?
We got Sinqua Walls and Jack Carlo for the main leads. And I'm playing the young version of Sinqua Walls. Our character's name is Kamal Allen. So I'm playing young Kamal Allen, the spinoff of Wesley Snipes, a different story. But the movie, man, it doesn't like it. People expect it to be like, oh, they better not, you know, mess up the classic. You know what I'm saying? That's usually how reboots are. This movie is literally like a modern day White Man Can't Jump. Literally the best way I can explain it. It's funny. It connects to what's going on in the world today. Like, it's very unfiltered. So I feel like it's a dope acting debut for Jack Carlo and for a 30th year anniversary for the movie.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm not anti-reboot. I feel like if you have something to say or add something new, and it sounds like this movie does, of course, with you playing the younger version with backstories, adding some more depth to characters. I mean, I find that's fantastic. I want to talk about Jack Carlo. How is he? Because we know him. I'm a fan of his music.
Yes.
On the acting front, what do you think? And then can he play ball?
You know, it's crazy. And I'll say this. There is a story going around with the cast saying that Jack Carlo dunked off of Vert in Birkenstocks on set. So I'll let him confirm that when that happens, you know, when that comes out. But he can hoop. And acting wise, like, he did amazing. I feel like he was around a legendary cast, a cast that had a really dope resume. And I feel like they casted the movie perfectly for him to be comfortable to play this role. Without giving too much of the movie away, because obviously I want people to see it on the 19th. But yeah, he did a great job. The movie altogether, it's perfect for the dude that he is in real life. Like, it's just an exaggerated version of that in a comical way.
Yeah, he's got charisma, a charisma for days. I really, I'm a fan, so I'm excited to see him take on this role. It sounds like you have an insane amount of passion for the world of basketball, which is obviously makes this role a great fit. Talk to me a little bit about that and how you got into now appearing in TV, and you mentioned the social media stuff. Well, give us the journey here, Anthony. What's the abridged edition?
Yes. Okay. Well, so a very, very long story short, just to give you a reference, I went to Losinger High School. That is in Lawndale, California. That is where Russell Westbrook graduated from. So he went there, and we were sponsored by Jordan the time I was a junior and a senior in high school. So start off when I was a kid, I used it as a coping mechanism, you know what I'm saying, as opposed to other things. And when I got to high school, I injured myself twice, which hindered me from using this coping mechanism. So I just, at that point in my life is when I decided I wanted to learn how to cook. I wanted to learn how to edit videos, how to do graphics, how to network, market, advertise, etc. I had my first corporate internship at 17 years old. So and that was in advertisement and marketing. So I feel like I just started a trend within myself to sharpen my tools every single day. And when it comes to basketball, just knowing these things, it kind of gave me a safety net, knowing I had these skills to freely do what I wanted to do in the basketball world. I feel like a problem is, like, people lose love for their sport. And that's because they make it feel like a job because they have to do it. And that's all they have to rely on. So after my injury, I moved into a mindset of, okay, let me make sure I have myself together and I have my own safety net built so I can freely be me 100% and have fun and have the option to put basketball down if I didn't want to, you know what I'm saying? So through all that stuff, went to Clemson and did track and field, and then went to Chicago State when NIL came out, strategically, just to, you know, be a part of that, because I just graduated. And now doing social media videos and doing videos of different creators and celebrities and things like that, man, everybody sees me, you know.
That's awesome.
Yes. No,
that's great. And very inspiring too for others watching. But now that you've been in a film and you get to do some acting chops, have you been bitten by that bug? Do you want to do more?
I do. So I want to make it a full-time thing. I feel like just the way that I am, my personality, I'm like a chameleon. I can blend into any environment. But on set, I felt like I like being the center of attention too, you know? So it's like, yes, I would love to do it more often. Definitely knowing that I'm in a few different scripts that writers are writing right now. So I'm in mind for a few different characters coming forward for some different projects. But, you know, we got to see how the movie does first and how everybody thinks that the performance went from everybody. So
yeah,
I'm glad to see that.
Well, fingers crossed for you. I think that's fun. I think that's exciting. Keep moving those goalposts back. And I think you'll score every time. Okay, before we go, let's have some fun. We here at Watch Mojo, we rank things. That's kind of our thing. We do all these top tens. You mentioned you threw out a bunch of those basketball films that you watched as a kid.
Right.
I want you, and maybe let's not limit it to basketball. Let's open it up to all sports films.
Okay.
What do you put at your top? What's your, if we were to do the Mount Rushmore, but you can only pick one of them. What tops your list?
Man.
Let's hear it.
I think I'm a music head too. So I would have to say Above the Rim.
Yeah. That's
I feel like Above the Rim because it's a mix of both worlds. And I grew up in LA and that was a big thing. My mom was like, she was in high school in the 90s when Tupac was just popping on the internet or popping in public or however they went back there. But yeah, I feel like that's my number one. Strict basketball movies. That's a tough one, man. I might have to go with Space Jam.
You wouldn't be alone. Trust me, you wouldn't be alone. So many people picked that. I don't know what it is about a good basketball movie.
Yeah.
There was actually one pretty recent with Ben Affleck. He did one. I think it's called The Way Back, where he was, came back as the basketball coach.
So yeah.
About those movies, just gets me every time. I get sucked right in. And I'm sure this one, White Man Can't Jump, the 2023 version, is going to do just that. Anthony, thank you so much for your time today. This has been really fun.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
They're going to kill him in the parking lot.
I'm out here. He got a flamethrower.
Flamethrower? What is this, Mad Max?
5, 4, 3, 2, I let one go. I don't blow, bro.
All right, it's now time for my chat with the very funny Stephen He.
Will Lord Metagon and his team of evil villains take over the world?
All hail Lord Metagon!
My guest today is a online sensation, a totally hilarious guy. I'm so excited to be chatting with him. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm honored to be on.
Well, I'm excited to chat with you, like I said, because I have been seeing you, and I think anybody who hasn't been hidden in like a bunker or something has seen you, right? We've all seen you.
I'm afraid I've ruined the internet for 2 months with emotional damage.
You made it so much better, right? What's that character? The Asian dad, is that what it is?
Yes, I call him Asian dad. Yes.
Okay, let's start there because there's some exciting stuff going. And by the way, you're at somewhere kind of cool. You're going to tell me where in a minute, but let's start. Sure. Let's start with the Asian dad. Where did this come from?
So I very, very brief kind of journey of how I got there. First, I went to become an actor. And then I went to London from Ireland. I'm Chinese Irish. I probably should have started with that one. Went to London and then went to New York to become an actor. Did a bunch of regular actor stuff, auditions, television, movies. Small. I never made a month's rent, it was very small. And then the pandemic hit and I was like, oh wait, nothing's happening anymore. No more auditions. All the things that I had landed got completely canceled. And so I was like, okay, so what could I do with my skill set? Oh, I know, I love comedy skits, so let me try and make some. And I started making comedy skits by myself, and I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to write, edit, film, barely knew how to expose a camera. It took me a good 200 skits or so to kind of get into the groove of it. And at about 220, and I had no followers at the time at all. I had absolutely no followers at the time. I made a skit that was me dodging my mom's slipper, and that was the first video to hit a million views. So that was like the first taste of blowing up. And then the Asian Dad character came on the top of my memory, I think around another 100 videos later, about 300 and some.
See, kids, don't give up.
Exactly.
That's awesome. So when you wanted to become, when you originally had envisioned yourself as an actor, was comedy kind of the goal, or were you going to be dramatic or whatever the case might be?
I think everyone will be shocked to hear this. It was the polar opposite. I've been a dramatic actor forever since I started when I was 13, doing a lot of stage, a lot of Shakespeare, especially London.
Shakespeare, scene.
Yeah, comedy, I never thought I was strong in comedy, and I rarely ever did it. So I've always looked at myself as a dramatic actor. And that's it's surprising now that I'm known for comedy, actually. It's surprising to me, too.
It's not that surprising, because if you look at some people that are really funny, they got so much great dramatic chops, right? And they can translate so well. I don't know, something about that I don't know.
Yeah, it worked out in this case. I'm very grateful that people related to the videos.
Okay, so I just, before we went on, I was just looking at some of your, because you're still obviously getting some really great fun content out there. I was laughing on your YouTube page. Where do these ideas come from? Like the new stuff, because you come up with one guy, one character, something fun, and then, like you said, 200 videos in. What? Where's the ideas coming from? Are you working, collabing with people, or is it just your brain, or what's happening?
Oh, that is such a good question, because yes, there are many answers to that. And that actually gives a lot of insight that I didn't even know before I began. In the beginning, I always wanted to make comedy skits. I remember even going back like 5-6 years before YouTube, just me with my classmates in class bantering. We always talk about, oh, this will be so funny, or oh, that would be so funny. So I have had so many ideas. And in the beginning, it was bang, 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 every single day, never ran out of ideas. And then I made all of them. And 200 videos later, I was just kind of dry. I was like, I don't know what else to make videos about. And then it became more of a skill. Like comedy skit creating became more of a skill where I had collected a bunch of devices that I'd be like, oh, I could tell a funny joke this way. I could satirize a moment, a line, a culture, like a specific way people do things. And it could be anything from a single word to a hand gesture, a person's hair. It doesn't matter what it was. I kind of learned the skill set of crafting comedy skits off of anything that I found relatable. And so today, after kind of this whole journey, I keep a notebook, which is like on my phone. And throughout daily life, anytime I encounter anything relatable or funny, I write it down. And that, there's a lot. Like in life, it's the speed that I collect these ideas massively outpace the speed I make the comedy skits. So I'm never short of ideas.
There you go. Another lesson for kids. Pay attention. You never know what kind of gems you'll find.
That's true. Very true.
Okay, let's talk about where we're at now, because you've got some kind of exciting series coming up. I want to talk about Ginormo, but right now you told me before we started rolling that you're actually in France. You're at Cannes for this series festival. What's going on there?
Yes, I've been very fortunate. I joined a production as an actor about a year ago. It's called Groundbreaking, and recently we were selected to premiere at Cannes. So I just came over for a really quick trip. And I had a great time. My God, I love that production so much. But myself, I have been wanting to go on a journey of bringing cinematic filmmaking over to YouTube. And that has a lot of challenges, because as any YouTuber knows, you're constantly competing in the algorithm, and your click-through and your retention basically decides the success of a channel. So in the process of bringing cinematic filmmaking over to YouTube, there had to be a lot of innovation, because unlike in a cinema, I can't take 30 seconds to set up a punchline. You know, in my regular videos, if I don't hit a punchline in 7 seconds, the video is flopping big time.
Yeah.
So there's a great challenge there with how do I bring a content of that kind of genre into a platform where everything is so fast and you're constantly competing. And I know anytime anyone's watching my videos, they're also scrolling Mr. Beast and cat videos and, you know, all of them. So Ginormal is a fantastic show that was created by Ken and myself, Ken Mock, my co-creator. And we decided to make a parody of a 1970s kaiju show.
Love it.
Kaiju being Godzilla, yeah. Big giant monsters, Power Rangers. We both love that time, which is funny because I'm much younger and I kind of grew up late, but I grew up in China. So we got things a little bit later than the rest of the world. And we always loved watching growing up, like how they dressed up people in rubber suits. And sometimes you could see like the sleeve pop out of the costume. Some terrible filmmaking, some terrible writing. Like, we wrote all of these as meta jokes into our show, you know, continuity mistakes. A character gets killed and that next episode, he's just back for no reason. all these writing that doesn't make sense, that is goofy. The effects are goofy. The fact that we did it a lot in camera as well, which is something that is pretty rare nowadays, to build the miniature sets, to build the costume, yeah. the mini cars, the mini people on the streets.
Oh, that's fun. That's so fun.
That was great fun. And one of the best part about the series is I've gotten some of my great, great friends to join me. We have 9 creators who are just amazing. And they're some of the biggest on the planet. Like Alan Chicken Chow, Jeannie Weenie, Ian Boggs, Call Me Chris as well, with her absolutely incredible 50 million followers. Well, she's well above that now if you combine all of her platforms. And just the fact that, you know, they were available and just so excited and passionate to come on and join the show.
We love to see it, Stephen. Thank you so much for all your time today, and enjoy yourself over there in France.
Oh, thank you so much, Matt. I appreciate it.
Here, protect yourself with this.
Okay. Great.
Coming soon.
All right, Phoebe, you know what we do. We go in the archives of Watch Mojo. We pluck out a top 10 list. We go beyond. What does that mean? It means me and you just get to have a little bit of fun. Riff on things a little bit. Today's category, top 10 scariest kids movie villains. I love a good villain. You?
Yes.
Okay. I don't
yes,
know.
Yes, I love a good villain. I love a scary kids villain. It's like the introduction to like horror for children, because yes. Some of them are like really creepy. So I'm excited about this.
And I feel like they don't make kid villains like they used to. You know what I mean? Especially like some of the more live action, you had like the practical effects and it was just inherently creepy.
Yeah. There's a lot of movies on this list that I like remember watching as a kid. And then there's also like those movies that they're not supposed to be scary, but they're really scary for children. Like Wallace and Gromit. Forget it. I was terrified.
What?
Terrified. Yeah, that movie's scary. It's a horror movie.
Wallace and Gromit. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Although you're not wrong, there's some things that were not meant to be scary. There's some old like 80s McDonald's commercials. You ever see this?
Yeah, like creepy Ronald McDonald.
Yeah, and they got the grimace, and it's just like they're in these old timey costumes from like old timey from the 80s, but they are creepy.
Yeah,
just a product of the time, guys. Product of the time. All right, let's see how many 80s kids movies end up on this list. Maybe a few. Speak of the devil right here. Number 10, 1985. The movie was The Black Cauldron, and the scary kids villain being the Horn King. Yeah, I remember seeing this.
Isn't this the movie that like almost like killed Disney? It like lost them so much money.
Yes. You're right, yeah.
So I want to take the focus away from the Horned King, who I feel always gets, you know, the credit. Gurgi is the best character in this movie. Do you remember Gurgi?
I do remember Gurgi.
Gurgi has no friends. Gurgi. Yeah, no, this movie's weird, but it's so funny. And he's creepy. The Horned King is creepy.
It's creepy. And like I said, 80s, 1985, guys.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. Yeah, Black. Did they remake that? I feel like that was remade. Or they tried to.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. Maybe a sequel. But it like almost tanked the company, so I doubt.
I doubt it. Yeah, probably not. Yeah, I can't. Yeah. There you go. Black Cauldron. A little bit of nostalgia today for me looking at some of these. 1996. I do remember this. I'm having a hard time remembering the villain here, what do you, with the appearance
Claude was, Frollo
from Hunchback of Notre Dame. This is the animated. Yeah. You know what I remember from this? I remember the Jason Alexander, who plays George Costanza. He was one of the voices of the.
Yeah. Who did he voice?
It was like one of the
statue people. Yeah, no, this movie is amazing. This villain is scary because it's like, it's a little too real. Like, he's like, I'm bad priest.
Oh.
It's like.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay, now. It's been so long since I've seen this movie.
Yeah, there's like a lot of adult themes in like his character and like the way that he treats people. And like, he's just like, it's so real. Like, that's what's scary. Like, this person could exist in real life. It's frightening.
I don't remember this movie doing too well, right? Like, we don't talk about it that much.
I don't know. I feel like it's a classic, though.
Is it, though?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm so out of the loop. People tell me.
You're not part of the Hunchback fandom. I stan Hunchback.
Are they going to, if they do the live action remake, then we know. Then we know that it was good.
Mm-hmm. Who would play the Hunchback? Quasimodo? No one would touch that with like a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I guess not, eh? Guess not. It'll just be like, that'll be one of those like AI, CG.
Maybe Bradley Cooper, because remember when Bradley Cooper played the Elephant Man on Broadway and he like distorted his body?
Yeah.
Maybe he could play Quasimodo.
He could play anything that Bradley.
Yeah.
And he gets to sing probably too. All right, here we go. Number 8, Ant Spiker and Ant Sponge, James and the Giant Peach, also from 96. Yeah, I remember this. I remember the ants.
This is a Tim Burton movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it, or I don't remember ever having seen it. Yeah, I think maybe I watched it when I was young, because I was born in 95, so this was like, I was a year old, so yeah. Maybe I watched it and just don't remember.
It's great. Well, that's the thing, too, about Burton movies, is that he just kind of naturally makes things creepy, right? Like, just in the design.
But the aesthetic.
But it was great, and those ants were pretty terrifying. Mm. Pretty terrifying stuff. Okay, what do you remember about number 7? I don't know if you've ever seen this movie. It's called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. It's under the radar. No, Lord Voldemort. How is this number 7, Watch Mojo?
Yeah.
He was terrifying.
He was really scary.
The no nose and everything.
Yeah, I remember watching this as a kid and being so afraid because the guy has like the turban, and when he takes it off, like Voldemort, it's literally on the back of his head.
Yeah.
And it's so, so, so scary that like, that's like for children. And it's so funny how like the series gets scarier and scarier as it goes on because the audience kind of ages with it, and they get different directors to like bring it into a more mature direction. But this still remains like one of the scariest villains from the Harry Potter franchise, especially Professor Quirrell. Like, he's so creepy. But I will say that another super freaky villain in a very realistic way is, what's her name? The one from, I can't remember her name. She's like the most hated Harry Potter villain. She was like from the Ministry of Magic, and she became like headmistress. And
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, the name.
She was scary. She was scary too.
Yeah, I'm shocked that this is number 7. But you're right. They totally went darker as the films went on.
Yeah.
And not just in tone, actual darker. I remember watching a theater and like, it's so dark.
I can't see. They went Game of Thrones.
They did. They went Game of Thrones. You have to adjust. Remember Game of Thrones? They're like, you have to adjust your set to this to get the proper. I don't want to do any work when I watch a TV show, okay?
No.
Show it on TV.
And then like them saying, this will always blow my mind when they said that it's supposed to be indicative of the time period. There's no time period in which dragons existed. There is none. So enough.
Yeah. Just say it was too dark. That's all. That's all we needed you to say. Speaking of dark, here we go. Number 6 is The Dark Crystal, 1982. Telling you about the 80s. Skeksis?
I think they're called Skeksis.
Skeksis?
Yeah, they're like super creepy puppets, birds, like, it's like, this is another example where it's like, I don't know that it's supposed to be this scary, but it is really terrifying.
Well, that's the thing. So this is Jim Henson, who, as much as he does these beloved puppets, you know, you got your Elmos and your, you know, your Sesame Street, Big Birds, Kermit the Frogs. He's also thrown our way some pretty creepy stuff, Henson. So, I mean, yeah.
And yeah, puppets, these are creepy.
Puppets to me are just weird.
Yeah, they can be. It's like it walks the line between like sweet and creepy. It could be like one wonky eye and it's like a nightmare.
So true. Yeah, it's, I don't know. Yeah, me and these ones were kind of like bird-like and they were like, yeah.
And they talked and they talked like,
yeah, those were freaky. And for kids, imagine, like, think of the kids, think of the children.
Toughen the children up, though, because, like, when I was young, I feel like I wasn't exposed to enough of this kind of stuff. So I grew up a scaredy cat. Like, I can't watch horror. Like, scare your children a little bit so that they're a little more tough, because I feel like a big baby now and I'm almost 30, so...
Chucky at 4. I think that's a good age.
Oh my God, Chucky. When I was a kid, we used to go to this movie rental place near our house. It was like a small family-owned business. And I would like brave myself to walk through the horror section. And I would see like the covers of the movies. Oh, and yeah. Chucky, couldn't.
They were the best. I loved the old school VHS horror covers. They were so great. Those are classic pieces of art, in my opinion. All right, we are at the midway point. And who else to put at number 5? Of these freaky, scary kids villains, but the Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz. Yeah, pretty creepy stuff. In 1939, they had this witch. Yeah, everything from the voice and the skin, the green skin. She's pretty creepy.
Yeah, she's creepy. I think what's creepier is that she like almost died filming this movie because like the pyrotechnics set her ablaze and she like so many people got injured and like very, very badly sick on this movie. And you know, like the lore behind this movie that like in the background of one scene, you can see like a munchkin hanging himself or something.
Yeah.
That like I find that there's like so much creepy lore behind this movie that it makes it kind of scary.
That and they treated the what's her poor name? Dorothy, the actress.
Judy Garland.
They treated her terribly.
Yeah.
They're giving her like diet pills and just unbelievable.
So weird. It's like things have changed a lot, but things have also not changed that much, which is the true villain, Hollywood.
There you go. Hollywood. That should be number one on the list.
Number one.
Hollywood's the true villain. But yeah, such a beloved classic, but yet such a dark past. But yeah, that Wicked Witch was pretty terrifying. Well done stuff from that actress that pulled it off. Number 4, here's something from our past. 1987. I'm telling you something about the 80s. The Brave Little Toaster's the movie, and it's the firefighter clown. Yes. If you don't know what this is, Google it, and you'll know exactly why this is on there. Man. Do you remember the Brave? First of all, what a weird story to tell.
Doesn't he like go to hell or something? Like this movie's like super dark.
Well, there's so many nightmare visions and that's where he sees that evil clown. And it's just, it's just weird. And again, a product of the late 80s here, but about the Brave Little Toaster. He's a bit of a cute character.
Yeah, well, he's just a toaster. But it's like characters like this that make me wonder, like, where does the fear of certain things in pop culture come from? Like clowns or porcelain dolls or whatever. And it's like, this is a perfect example why people are afraid of clowns.
There you go. Brave Little Toaster, we blame you. Number 3, we're going back to Oz. The Return of Oz, The Wheelers. I never saw this Return.
Neither
to Oz.
Have I. Let me Google the Wheelers. Yeah, I want to
tell
see.
Me what a tell me what a Wheeler looks like.
Images.
So, Wicked Witch of the West was the one from The Wizard of Oz, and now they're saying,
"Oh my God,
the Wheelers."
Oh, they're really creepy.
Okay.
They're like on 4 legs with like masks, like they look like painted dolls or something, like really creepy. Why? What is that?
Okay, well, yeah, Watch Mojo is basically saying that the designs, the costumes were incredibly haunting and incredibly scary. Just 2 years later, how many Oz sequels are there?
I don't know. What's the one with the Eddie Redmayne? Is that an Oz one where he's like some grand high asshole or something?
Eddie Redmayne?
With Mila Kunis?
No, I have no idea what you're referring to.
Okay, wait. This is like, going to You're talking really about like a
very
me.
Recent one and within the past couple of years?
Yes.
Oh, I have no idea.
Is that a...
Wizard of Oz take?
Oh, no. It was Jupiter Ascending. It has nothing to do with Oz. Mila Kunis was in... Maybe it was James Franco. Someone was in an Oz movie.
You're right. James Franco did one called... I think it was just called Oz, where he was like, yeah, it's kind of like the Oz...
Is Mila Kunis in it?
I don't know, but...
There's something there that brought me to that. Okay, yeah. A lot of Oz.
A lot of Oz. Just not Jupiter Ascending. Don't put that...
Just cut that out.
No, we're keeping it.
No.
I love that. Okay, so that was number... What are we at? That was number three. Number two. Oh, my God. 1990, The Witches. Okay, forget that the Anne Hathaway remake one. 1990s, The Witches, when the witches, they all take off their wigs and their faces in that room. Phoebe, tell me you've seen this or even know of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I have seen the new one, too, with Anne Hathaway. I don't know what the reception was to that one. I thought it was kind of good. But
lukewarm.
It wasn't, like, as scary. Like, no. They weren't as creepy. I think, like, this movie is... It's like, this is what I mean about toughening children up. Show them some scary shit.
I'll tell you this much, too. I don't know why, but they showed this movie to us in school. I think it was, like, one of those Fridays, and the teacher brought in, like, a... Brought in the TV and
like on the roller wheels.
They roll it in. I'm old.
Best day.
And they showed us The Witches. Can you imagine showing that scene in school?
It's pretty scary. It's like really terrible. Scary.
Who was the actress? It's Angelica Houston, right?
Angelica Houston, yeah.
Yeah, she's great. And she played Morticia in the 90s Addams Family movie. She's great.
She is great. She's amazing.
And she was in not the last John Wick, but the one prior.
Oh, really?
When she popped up, I was like very excited. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Loved it. Yeah, The Witches, that classic. That's number two. I can't wait to see what number one is. Watch Mojo does this. Sometimes they'll throw out some honorable mentions. So let's see what other creepy kid villains they came up with. Of course, we got to mention from Sleeping Beauty, Maleficent. But I think Angelina Jolie's take has kind of softened that, right? Where now she's kind of like this...
Yeah. And then like she's also in like that Disney Channel show, The Descendants.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And it's like it takes away the power. But yeah. I do feel that this was a scary villain for like an old kids movie.
Are you kidding me? Of course. 1984, The Never Ending Story. What is it? How do you pronounce it?
Gmork. I love this movie. I love this movie so much. It's so good. He is creepy. He's like that creepy wolf. Like,
oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like glowing eyes. What a great movie. But also devastating. Like when the horse. Do you know that scene that I'm talking about?
I do know that scene. How dare you bring that up?
I'm sorry.
Traumatizing.
I'm so sorry.
That really is, though, right?
No, it is. I watched this movie for the first time, like not that long ago. After hearing the song in Stranger Things.
Oh.
And I watched it and it was like devastating. Like, yeah. I was like weeping.
The horse scene, it's, folks, if you haven't seen.
Oh my
seen,
God.
And for a kid's movie, too.
Yeah. Poor don't horse.
Don't make them like they used to. Yeah. It's a sad it ended, the never ending story, right?
did it, though.
Did it. The Watership Down, 1978. This, I'm not really sure what it is. General Woundwort.
So it's like a movie about like rabbits who like go to war. And as someone who is a rabbit fanatic,
yes.
There's a rabbit right here.
Oh, no.
I've never seen this movie. But they like kill each other and it's like it's very disturbing. I don't know if I would classify this as a children's movie, though. I feel like it's kind of like a bit more adult. But then again, like it, you never know. In like the 70s and 80s, children's movies were just like a free for all.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think I watch this movie because I love bunnies too much, and to see them in pain, it's awful.
I'm sure it is. The Great Mouse Detective, 1986, Professor Radigan, yes, the criminal mastermind, and he was the rat.
I love what it says underneath the HM. It says a criminal mastermind, but also a rat.
That's right.
Like, that makes him less of a villain. In a world of mice, a rat is scary.
It is scary. Yeah, I hate rats. Anastasia, also an honorable mention here. Rasputin, right? Yeah. Based on the historical figure. All right, let's get to number one. Okay, here we go. Not from the 80s. From the 2000s. It's The Other Mother, Caroline, 2009.
Coraline.
Yeah. Huh? What did I say?
Caroline.
No, not Carol. I was thinking of that song. Sweet Caroline.
What song? Oh, Caroline. Sweet Caroline.
Sweet Coraline.
Yeah. I love this movie so much. It's giving Tim Burton, but Tim Burton, I don't think, was involved. And I'm pretty sure that this was produced by Leica, who do like stop motion animation for a lot of movies. So they did like Box Trolls, which is one of my favorite movies, Kubo and the Two Strings. This is an amazing, amazing movie. The villain is so like, I get this is a kid's movie. It's scary. Like, I watched it not that long ago with my husband for the first time, and I was scared. Like, I had a hard time sleeping after because, like, there's like ghostly children, and like the mother is like what do they call her, like a bell mat or something,
something like that.
Oh, she's so
she got the spider body thing. It was horrifying stuff for kids movies, but what a great film.
It's Coraline. amazing.
Awesome. All right, well, Phoebe, listen, that was terrifyingly fun. I can't thank you enough. Always a blast having you here on the show. Thanks again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition, everybody. Big thanks once again going out to Phoebe DeJure. Always a blast when Phoebe's on the show. Also want to thank Anthony and Steven. How much fun were they? Plus, biggest thanks going out to you. Yeah, you, for watching and listening. Hey, I've been Mr. Hollywood, and this has been Pop Culture Now.